Never look at your city or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we broadcast live each and every weeknight, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Folks, Global Star, that's the place to be. We also simulcast live on Blog Talk Radio, that's BTR, as well as, of course, you can view us on our YouTube channel. Just go to HagmanandHagman.com, click on the, if you go to HagmanandHagman.com, there you'll right front and center, it will be the evening's broadcast. And, of course, HagmanReport.com, show prep information you need for the show and important stories, of course, and important news broadcasts. Now, again, we've got two separate websites. That's HagmanReport.com and HagmanandHagman.com. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm, film investigator, researcher, Joe Hagman, my son. Together, something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. We have a lot of news to get into tonight. At the bottom of this hour, Josh Tully from the Josh Tully Show is going to be checking in with us from the Republican National Convention. A lot of news there, a lot of political news there. Joe, before I get started into I want to cover a couple of things here because I was watching the Baton Rouge situation develop as it happened. I was on the phone with law enforcement officers from that area, around that area. I was on the phone with other sources, and I've got information to break, but hey, it's good to have you.
It's great to be here. Looking forward to the show tonight. We got a lot to cover, and we're going to do just that. Like you said, Josh Tully will be joining us at the bottom of this hour, live from Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. He's going to be there all week, and he's going to be providing us updates as the convention progresses.
You know, this weekend, we were contemplating going to the convention, and there's a lot of reasons why we're not. A lot of reasons. Alex Jones did a great job coming out of the gate with the YouTube. Personal message he did. Of course, that is, he's got a speaker's area there at the convention. I shouldn't say speaker's area, but he's going to be talking from the convention, but not from inside, but to his own audience. But anyway, we're going to be getting into that at the bottom of the first hour. But Joe, I just want to get into something here. That sounded like almost like a dog howl there when you moved that microphone. That's pretty interesting. Obviously, I do want to bring this up. We had a very huge tragedy this weekend.
Yes, we did.
Well, yeah. And you know, I don't really like the word tragedy because it implies something that, although it was tragic, it implies it was out of our hands, basically, meaning it was a tragedy. That word has different meanings to it, and I just don't like it applied in this situation. This was a crime. This was a terrorist attack. And folks, remember last week, and you can go back to last week when I spoke about the Nation of Islam, and I talked about the zebra killings, if you remember that. I spoke about the melding of the Nation of Islam, Black Lives Matter. I gave a lot of information. I think, this is when you were out. I talked about this. And I said at that time, and folks, you can go back and run the video. At that time, I spoke and said that we were going to have more killings. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's not over. It's just beginning. The ambush of police officers is just beginning.
And you hear about the Baton Rouge and obviously the Dallas police officers, but there have been other cities across the nation where police officers have been ambushed from Missouri to Virginia. Another one happened. I got it right here. I mean, there is no shortage of these shootings. What we're seeing in clusters, though, are Dallas and in Baton Rouge. But the police need to be careful because they have been obviously overtly targeted.
Yeah,
and it's not just the Black Lives Matter. It is also the administration.
Well, okay, the next couple of minutes here, this is kind of what I put together as I watched everything unfold this weekend, and as I spoke to my sources within law enforcement, and I'm talking about municipal police officers and one federal and then two municipal law enforcement officers, one of the law enforcement officers in a city down south, not too far from Baton Rouge, and who had colleagues, of course, affected directly in Dallas. But here's what I want to tell you about the killings in a microcosm sense, in a smaller sense, in a targeted sense, and then, of course, in a larger sense. Number one, folks, this is not going to be the last time that this happens in the near term. And I said that last week in the wake of Dallas, and I'm saying that again right now. This will not be the last time. As a matter of fact, there will be other ambushes expected in the Northeast this time. Specifically, Baltimore, because of the Freddie Gray verdict. We're seeing an uptick, an incredible uptick in social media communications about Baltimore. We're also looking at events taking place in the Southwest as well and on the West Coast. Okay. Those, basically any large city, but specifically Northeast and then the Southwest and then the West Coast right now is what we're getting in terms of social media feed. Now, a little bit about Gavin Eugene Long, just very quickly. I don't know how many folks, I don't know how much of this has been on the mainstream media. I don't know how much of this has been, of course, he's got a pseudonym, Cosmo Setapenra, Cosmo Setapenra. I don't know how many people have heard of that. He's the author of three books, The Cosmic Way, The Laws, and The Cosmos, and The Cosmic Way. Or Cosmo Way, I'm sorry, C-O-S-M-O Way, Volume 2. So the Cosmo Way, Volume 2, and then, of course, The Laws of the Cosmos. And he had, up until yesterday, or last evening, a YouTube channel that had, upwards of 4 dozen videos that have been taken down by YouTube. He also had he also had social media under Cosmo Setapenra, under that name, expunged from social media. He had social media under Gavin Long expunged, social media gone. what remains is the Amazon author page under Cosmo Seta Penra. Now, I'm going to spell that last name for you. S-E-T-E-P-E-N-R-A. The I had seen this yesterday, and frankly, I looked at this, and I wasn't sure it was him. This was right as the police had made the identification of the shooter. Now, Gavin Eugene Long, of course, born 7/17/87, died
carrying out the attacks on his birthday.
7/17/16, 29 years old. A couple of things that you should know about: he converted to Islam 3 years ago. He was an E5. He was a military officer at the rank of E5. And videos on his account show that he was in fact a Nation of Islam member and promoter. Then, about 12 to 14 months ago, unfortunately, it was when I had it up on my screen. There's no excuse. I was usually do screen captures, and I didn't do it on this one, and it refreshed, and it was gone. But he denounced being a part of any organization this about, I'm going to say about 2 or 3 months ago. He ranted and made a lot of inflammatory statements about whites. He made numerous references to the killing of Alton Sterling, the black man from Baton Rouge, who died on July 5th of this year. He, of course, is from Kansas City. Now, it was reported, and I don't know how many people caught this, but it was reported that a reporter had tracked, as soon as his name was released by the police, a reporter from Kansas City had looked into his background, found his Kansas City home, and paid a visit to that house. That reporter was met with a long rifle at the door. Within 2 hours, that home was surrounded by law enforcement officers. All right. Now, the July 12th, 2016 video posted on Long's YouTube account, he discusses being in the Marines and reaching the rank of E5. This man was a highly trained tactical shooter. All right. He ambushed. He set up the ambush and ambushed the police officers in Baton Rouge. Once more, I want to just drive this point home. This man is part of the Nation of Islam, even though he denounced it. He denounced it for commercial purposes, basically, or denied. He stepped away from it because his books, The Cosmo Way, and the related writings of Gavin Eugene Long promote a kind of a odd blend, an odd mix of Islam and socialism, if you will. Now, his last video, he was driving a vehicle and passing out his books. He met a number of men, didn't look like they knew each other. And before that encounter, and he promoted his book that also discusses, and I do have a copy of his book in electronic format, Black Liberation Theology. Now, notice that's a very important phrase, Black Liberation Theology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got to understand that how it relates to Islam and the Nation of Islam, two separate things. And before I get going any further, let me explain the difference between Islam and the Nation of Islam, because the difference, there's a big difference here. Traditional Islam teaches that there's only one God, and that's Allah. God works through prophets rather than assuming a physical form. That's Islam. Now, the Nation of Islam asserts that its founder, Fard Muhammad, was the incarnation of Allah, much like Jesus Christ would be in Christianity. Now, beginning in 1930, Fard worked in Detroit, where this Nation of Islam originated, to establish his movement before disappearing mysteriously, I might add, in 1934. No one knows what happened to him. As far as the racial issues, Traditional Islam embraces the fact that the Quran says that Allah created the human race from a single male and female and made you into nations and tribes. Okay. Where the Nation of Islam focuses primarily on blacks or and other non-Caucasians, well above whites. It's black supremacy with black liberation theology. All right. The tenet, basically, of the Nation of Islam holds that whites were created by a renegade black scientist named Yaqub, for what it's worth. Now, all right. Gavin Eugene Long, the murderer from yesterday, based on information I received contemporaneous with the as events were happening, and this from a law enforcement source, suggests that he was not a lone actor. Other reports I received suggest that Long, the shooting was independent of the previous day, or the previous the earlier situation where the pawn shop I'm looking for my notes here. There was a situation where there was a pawn shop that was broken into in Baton Rouge. Weapons were stolen and threats were made against the police department. All right. Now, let me just make sure I've got my notes here. According to how I believe that this is going to play out and where this is coming from and who is feeding this. I'll just go back to Long here very quickly. What he said was this. And you know what? I do have his pictures.
Here. I mean, there is many quotes from the different videos that he
right
from the social media presence, from Twitter to YouTube to Facebook. This is where he did most of his talking, as well as the writing in his book, as he referenced. Right.
And that's one thing I wanted to make sure people understood. Facebook, Twitter, they will censor pro-Christian remarks. They will censor everything. They will allow this filth and this racially incendiary stuff to go on. And that's by design.
Just to give you an example, United suspend a pilot. They suspended a pilot who called for Hillary Clinton in a tweet. This guy was not only a pilot, he was a Republican West Virginia lawmaker named Michael Folk. He was suspended from flying for saying that Hillary Clinton should be tried for treason, then hung in the mall in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Things like that, which, the hanging part could have been left out, tried for treason. There's no issue there. But we've seen Kurt Schilling being fired from ESPN for making remarks about Hillary and about the transgendered bathroom issues.
That's right.
But you have people like the talking heads on CNN who called the Dallas police shooter courageous and brave.
Exactly. So the roots, the origins of Black Lives Matter, the origins of the Nation of Islam and the outgrowths from the Nation of Islam and Islam itself, this is a volatile cocktail here inside the United States right now. And they are working concurrently and in some cases together, which is interesting because traditionally speaking, the Nation of Islam and Islam, there would be like a Shia and Sunni kind of a relationship there. But now they're working together, seemingly. The commonality here is Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter appears to be the umbrella group. And part of that umbrella group, I talked about this before, you're going to be hearing more about this, is Freedom Road Socialist Organization, that's FRSO, which is a Marxist-Leninist organization that calls for the overthrow of capitalism. Here's why I mentioned
also CARE has joined forces with Black Lives Matter, the Council
of American Islamic Relations, which they're the unindicted co-conspirators from the Holy Land Foundation, and they hate it, absolutely hate it, when you make reference to that fact. but it's a true statement. Unindicted co-conspirators of the Holy Land Foundation. Of course, the Holy Land Foundation, that had a lot to do with money laundering back in the, about a decade ago. Now, I know we're only about 5 minutes before, we are joined live by, Josh Tully, but it's so important for me to really drive this home, folks. We are at war here, a war that Obama and Valerie Jarrett have created domestically. The police officers are the targets of this war. America has bloodied, battered, and bruised this country intentionally into pushing us into this civil riot, or civil war, if you will. Black and blue. Think about that. Because blue, of course, blue of the officers, blue of the law enforcement community, and black pitted against blue. Now, you know, it's interesting because when I spoke about this and I said this was going to happen, and I spoke about the Nation of Islam and I spoke about the zebra killings, I got emails from people who said this is racist. This is no more racist than any other crime statistic, and evil and such. You know what, folks? I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to take anything back. I'm telling you right now, it is what it is. This is at its root is this Islamic / black supremacy now being thrust upon America, this nation, in the final months of Obama's reign of terror here in this country. If Hillary Rodham Clinton, the witch, if she gets in office for any reason, I can tell you this, this agenda will not just continue, but it will be even exponentially worse. It'll become exponentially worse. Black Lives Matter, you need to understand what this is all about. What's going on in Cleveland, the anti-Trump protests associated with Black Lives Matter, the cries of racism, the cries of anti-immigration. This is all part of the theater that's behind the Obama-Jarrett agenda. This is all behind the theater of this Marxist-Leninist initiative that has calls for the overthrow of capitalism, that calls for, that calls America an inherently racist nation, that also condemns Israel for conducting a terrorist war of Zionism against the Arab Palestinian people for their sacred rights. They even throw that in there. All of this is melded together right now by Obama at the highest levels of government, and it is only going to get worse. Police officers, more will die in additional incidents, and they're all orchestrated and all approved operationally at the highest levels of our government. Trust me when I tell you, none of this is by accident. This is all intended to happen, and it's intended to happen right now. If you remember the source I had that was right before the 2012 election. Since, and I had the occasion to speak with my source this weekend, and basically he said this: look, this would have happened in 2012 had it not been assured that Obama would have gotten in. I mean, so it was assured back then when it was going hot. Yeah, everything was ready to go, but it wasn't pushed like it is right now. All of this is because this is Obama's last gift as a Marxist, Leninist, Muslim orchestrating conductor of the orchestra that consists of Black Lives Matter, Nation of Islam, and other organizations that include as well the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, FRSO. Okay, so before we get to our guest, I just want to say one more thing, folks. If you do nothing else today, please do one thing next day, next two days, 3 days, until you get it done. Any law enforcement officer in your hometown, please buy them a cup of coffee. Go up to them, shake their hand, tell them you appreciate what they're doing. Just do that, because we need to quell this, and we need to get ahead of this right now, or we're going to lose this country. All right, Joe.
With us now, we have Josh Tully from The Josh Tully Show. at the Republican National Convention, coming live here on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Josh, it's great to have you on. How's it going,
Joe?
Out there?
It is great being here. I'm glad you're feeling good, buddy.
Yeah, feeling a lot better. Folks, as you know, Josh came on when I had surgery about 2 weeks ago and filled in and did a fantastic job. And now he is in Cleveland covering the Republican National Convention. How's the mood been there, Josh? I saw a little bit of the coverage today, and it seemed that there was a little bit of chaos, if you will.
Yeah, there was a little contention. Some people thought that they wanted to have a roll call vote on a rules change, which would be their last-ditch effort in order to stop Trump, the party that's famous for not listening to its delegates in a weird way, had decided, that ain't going to fly. And then Ryan's Priebus literally just left the stage. So it looks like the Never Trump effort has come to a dead end, which has made some of the people mad. But overall, with the exception of that incident, most of it has been really docile inside the outer ring of security. So the way security works here is they have three rings, and once you get inside the outer ring, it's fairly docile. Once in a while, you'll have a protester run through, but overall, it's kind of quiet. The real shocking thing, guys, is how most of the people are not talking about the issues. You would think that here we are, you know, we just saw what we saw in Baton Rouge, we just saw what we saw in Turkey, we just saw what we saw in Dallas. Issues and topics would be hot-button things, but they're not. They're talking about, you know, hey, what band is going to be playing? Hey, where do they have that Greek food? Anything but the things that are actually important, which is really kind of sad since the political system is run by the two parties. You would hope at least the two parties would be part of the political system, and they seem to just be having a party.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, you talked about the no Trump people and what they're trying to do. And I want to know, since you're there on the floor, I heard a rumor that Ted Cruz might be speaking tomorrow and that he might lead an anti-Trump walkout. Have you heard anything of the sort?
I have heard a rumor to that effect. I also heard a couple other rumors that if they're substantiated would be really big news. It would involve some delegates doing some maneuvering contrary to election law. I'm waiting for confirmation on these things before I kind of name names and spill beans. But yeah, there are kind of subtle whispers that there might be some sort of gentle revolt. But odds are, guys, I really doubt it. I think from Ted Cruz's standpoint, it doesn't benefit him at all. Now, the anti-Trump movement, yeah, totally. They want to do it. That's why they wanted to have the roll call today to get the rules changed. But Ted Cruz, if I were Ted, and I praise God that I'm not, but if I were Ted, I would be just waiting. I would wait. You're a young guy. You have a lot of momentum. You have a party that just got broken because of you. And if you truly believe the guy who's at the front of the ticket can't lead and it's going to lead to a failure, then you could even do a challenge at the end of the 4 years against the sitting president. And that's not unheard of. So he has time. Just let it play out. Now, will he have that much patience? I don't know. The anti-Trumpers here don't seem to, but to be honest, it kind of defeats their purpose too, because what that does is it just solidifies that pro-Trump, anti-establishment movement. And I think, you know, there's a growing tension of that. Today's the first day, everybody's kind of docile, you know, enjoying the scenes and all that sort of stuff, but there is this anti-establishment sort of mindset. And I think what's really interesting is Ryan's is an establishment guy, and to have the establishment people turn on him like they did today, that was fairly interesting too. And you know, remember back in 2012, the party essentially did the same thing with the Paul campaign, where they had that floor vote and essentially botched it so bad that, you know, people saw the teleprompter. They said the ayes had it when the nays clearly had it. This time, they're not allowing for a roll call vote, and they knew why. I mean, they knew what it was for, so they weren't allowing for it. But they didn't handle it well either. And it led for establishment people to even question, you know, Ryan's capability in his position. I think he should leave that post anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Josh, I want to thank you so much for reporting live. Folks, we're talking with Josh Tolley. And, of course, Josh Tolley has got his own radio program every day. And folks, you can go to his website, linked off of our website. How about the establishment Republicans there? What are you seeing there with their presence? I know what you said, but is there something else like brewing in the background, perhaps, in addition to what we're seeing?
You know, well, I think kinda... there's a little disdain. I think there's a little annoyance. I think what has happened is, especially on the outer ring, they have to put up with Trump supporters. See, it's interesting when Ron Paul ran, he had the ability over the course of two election cycles to change a lot of delegates. Well, Trump didn't have that political machine behind him. He's kind of winning just on pure muscle of public hate for the establishment. So when it was Ron, the Republican Party had to deal with an actual change in the guard of you know, delegates. Well, now this time, they basically just have to tolerate them. They're kind of like the cousin at the family reunion you don't really want to put up with. And you notice that in the peripheral activities. You know, you have the former chairman, Michael Steele, I believe his name was. He was out walking about and, you know, putting up with the Trump people, but you could just kind of tell it's like rubbing them the wrong way. I was in the elevator with Alan West. He's kind of getting rubbed the wrong way, even though he's trying to position himself as, you know, this now liberty-loving individual. You see a lot of that. You see a lot of friction between the establishment people on the inside and the Trump fans on the outside. And that's what they really are, is they're fans. Because, again, he doesn't really have that political base that Ron Paul built over two election cycles.
Interesting. Yeah, one of the things that confused me is the voting on the rules and going in here. But, you know, you covered that and that part's over. Now, from here on out, are we just looking at Trump being accepting the nomination, speeches from political pundits? What procedural things take place from here on out?
Well, actually, most of the procedural stuff, believe it or not, happened last week. The Republican convention as a party has been here for 2 weeks already. So the Rules Committee and all that sort of stuff, that already actually took place last week. And procedurally, what happens then is some of the things that the Rules Committees and those other committees come up with have to go to a floor vote. So today you saw a lot of that. You saw a lot of the stuff that came up as a floor vote. And most of that stuff, and at least the big ones, like the one everybody is waiting for today, is pretty much done away with. Now the focus is going to be on how do we build unity in order to take on Hillary Clinton. And you started to see that today already with, for example, the pastor who said the blessing at the end of this afternoon session was talking about how we're not fighting amongst ourselves, we have one united enemy, and that enemy is Hillary Clinton. It reminded me, actually, that we don't fight against flesh and blood, but powers, principalities, and rulers in dark places, you know. But maybe that's where Hillary's from, I don't know. But the overall sentiment is now, hey, everybody, you know, get on the same page, what can we do as a party? And that, I think, is interesting, too. I mean, this has been very much our side versus your side. Let's not pay attention to what our side has done. Let's just make it our side versus your side. I don't know if that's going to serve them too well moving forward. I think the Republicans have to do some serious soul searching. I mean, if 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014, and now 2016, they haven't gotten the message that the people are kind of sick and tired of the same old party, I don't know how much more the party could take, to be honest. And you hear whispers about that, too. You know, inside the convention space, everybody's, you know, hunky-dory. We're all, well, not, I don't want to put myself in that thing. I'm a journalist. But everybody on the floor is all, you know, hey, we're wearing red and, you know, elephants are awesome. But once it's break time and people are just sitting outside, you know, on the benches, there's growing discontent amongst the rank and file, for sure. And, you know, there's always these whispers of, well, you know, maybe it's time for something new. Maybe it's time for a third party.
Interesting. Looking at the list of speakers here, is there any mm-hmm. one person that you're looking forward to or interested in hearing
that to be honest,
could be controversial?
Not really. I mean, I don't expect any fireworks. I think the party's doing a really decent job at trying to put a squash to anything that's going to be controversial. The lineup that they have, the direction Trump has decided to take the speaking lineup. And that's the other thing, too. The speakers are approved by the leading candidate. The candidate, if he's locked up the nomination by the time they get here, it's picked by him. So Trump knows Ted Cruz is invited to speak. He offered to extend that invitation. So I'm assuming that there's some sort of, you know, let's make up and be friends. But what interests me more than what's going on the inside in terms of speakers is what's on the outside, and that's this growing police presence. And, you know, even since what we saw in Baton Rouge, the security has changed. Because we were here before Baton Rouge happened, and then after Baton Rouge, well, even to be honest, Nice, the event in Nice. Now on the sidewalk areas where people are, you know, they close down these streets and everybody's just walking around, they have parked dump trucks with snow plows at those ends of the street so somebody can't plow a truck through the corridor there. So it's interesting to see how the police response has changed even since we've been here.
Have there been any disruptions of any major, in any major sense? When I say disruptions, I guess security incidents, massive protests, violent incidents outside of the convention hall itself, to where
not really. There was a couple guys arrested for possession of an assault rifle, and then there was some back and forth between some Black Lives Matter and some pro-Trump people in a park, and the police built a wall between them, but that kind of dispersed peacefully. I mean, there's nothing like we've seen in other places, which kind of leaves everybody with an eerie feeling, to be honest, because the overall tension coming into this debate, or not this debate, this convention, is it's palpable. I mean, everybody has seen what has been happening in this country in the past 6-8 months and around the world. So it's kind of like the thing that nobody's talking about. You know, the cops aren't talking about it, the people aren't talking about it. Everybody knows it's there. Everybody's a little trigger happy. You know, as soon as there's sirens, people kind of gasp and step back because they're waiting for that next thing. And it's kind of revealing of two things. One, how scared America is becoming, because they really are. You know, as soon as a siren pops off, everybody's kind of, where is it? What's happening? Where do we go? And two, how that tension is having an impact on this election cycle. I mean, if you think about it, what's really happening right now is the voting public is trying to decide not who's going to be a better bureaucrat, not who's going to have a better capability of, you know, negotiating budget deals across the aisle in a swing year, whatever. I mean, nothing like that. What they're really asking themselves is who is going to keep me safer, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? And as much as the political shenanigans are fun and exciting, and, you know, I've been a political junkie since I was 12 years old, for goodness sakes, as much as that's here and, you know, there's some of that for everybody, that overall tension that you can feel, it just makes the whole thing have kind of an eerie vibe to it. And I think that's part of the reason why not only the protests have been docile, but the same thing with the celebrations, you know, the music and all that sort of stuff. Because everybody, including the protesters, are kind of feeling this build-up. And I was talking to some officers today, and they were saying, you know, Thursday is most likely going to be the worst day of it. And then they announced that Trump was going to be in town tonight because he wanted to see his wife speak. And instantly there was this increased presence, you know, more helicopters in the air, more snipers on roofs, but also more tension in the people. And I think it really says something that's sad about this country, that we have gotten to this place where, to be honest, we're almost paranoid at being outside. We've seen so much of this that people are a little scared to just be in mass public places right now.
Wow. Well, yeah, and I mean, I can understand that. I think we all can understand that. I'm not sure I would describe it as paranoia. However, it certainly feels like that in some cases. But yeah, you know, it's, well, even with the allowance, well, not the allowance, I suppose, but with open carry right now, well, have you seen, I mean, is there a lot of open carry outside of the convention?
There is, actually. There's quite a substantial amount of it, and the police response has been very docile. I know in the news there was this story yesterday or the night before that the police union was urging Kasich to implement a ban on open carry, even if it's temporary. And, of course, constitutionalists were like, well, you just can't do that. You can't put arbitrary bans on things. But... And on a boots-on-the-ground level, no. I mean, we've seen a number of people today open carry, and the police haven't given them a hard time at all. They take note of it. You know they take note of it. You know, everybody's eyes kind of goes to the guy with the gun. But no harassment at all. No, you know, hey, why'd you even bother? And along those same lines, you get a lot of thank yous to the police as well. And it's going to be interesting to see if that's different than next week. Next week, I'm going to be at the DNC as well. And here, as the cops make their way down the street, there's always people saying, thank you for what you're doing, you know, it's great to see you out here serving your country. But at the same time, when the police are in a public area, there seems to be an avoidance also. You know, it's a recognition, but there's also an avoidance. And I'm not sure if that avoidance is based on just what we've witnessed in Dallas and Baltimore, or, I mean, Dallas and Baton Rouge, or if it's this idea of, you know, let's just let them work and give them their safe space. But there's definitely an avoidance once you get out that first ring of individuals.
Folks, we're talking to our good friend Josh Tully from joshtully.com, The Josh Tully Show, which airs, by the way, every Monday through Friday, 10 to noon Eastern Time. That's 9 to 11 Central Time. And, of course, he's coming to us graciously from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, just down the road from us. What's the talk about Pence? As being Trump, or your feelings about Pence?
Well, my feelings about politicians lately, you know, I kind of wear them on my sleeve. The thing I don't like about Pence is he has backed TPP, and right. TPP to me is just a monstrosity of an organization. And it's, for those who have been living under a rock, TPP is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it basically erodes sovereignty. It takes away our nation's ability to be a nation. And we're seeing more and more of these actions. And Trump came out as the anti-TPP candidate. Well, Pence was somebody who supported TPP. So now on the same ticket, you have two opposing sides of what could be one of the most important issues in this generation, absolutely. Because TPP is a precursor to what the EU has become. You know, the EU started as a trade organization. It was just going to be for trade, you know, easy trade across borders, allowing them to keep up with growing economies like Russia, China, and the U.S. And then it turned into, well, you know, we're going to need some governance if we're going to have these open borders. And then that turned into, well, let's have our own elected officials. And then that turned into, let's have our own court system. And that turned into, our rules now supersede national sovereignty. Well, TPP comes with some of that stuff already built in. So what it took the EU a few decades to accomplish, TPP is coming in halfway prepared. And that, to me, is extremely concerning. And I'm not sure how that's going to work out. Now, Pence is somebody who was kind of toying with the idea of throwing his hat in the ring anyway. And he just was, you know, late on the gun. So to have him come up in this way and be on the ticket, I think it causes a little bit of hesitancy in Trump supporters. Obviously, they needed somebody on the ticket that was a politician. Two non-politicians didn't help. And obviously, they were probably going to go with a governor. Typically, whenever a senator has won, or any sort of elected official other than a governor has won an office, the next office is typically held by a governor. Just the way it goes, because people like to see that executive ability. So it was kind of obvious that they needed to put that executive ability on the ticket. I don't know. I thought for a while it was going to be Newt, but Newt didn't have that governorship behind him. If I had to guess right now, a Trump victory would probably mean a Newt Secretary of State, if it was, you know, tomorrow. But that's my take on Pence. I mean, very establishment.
It was a compromise by Trump because, well, I mean, looking at it, the compromise in a number of ways that he brought Pence in. Obviously, Christie was on the short list, as was Newt Gingrich, and Pence came through. But I think compromise was written all over that selection by Donald Trump. I mean, that's just my view. But I also think, too, that this has shades of Reagan / Bush written all over it as well, when Reagan selected Bush for his running mate. You know, so that's kind of what I'm seeing.
No, that's a very good observation. I would agree with that.
You know, I feel, honestly, I feel like I'm watching 1968 happen all over again, but a much more dangerous 1968. And I think when you go to Philadelphia next week, I think perhaps that'll tell the tale as to what, you know, what the geopolitical landscape in the United States will be. But, Joe, I don't know if you have any other questions here. I know that so many people are saying thank you, Josh Tully, for we're just getting inundated with emails from listeners who are saying thank you so much for a fresh and refreshing voice, Josh Tully from the RNC.
It's an honor. Thank you.
We know one listener says something that we are not getting from any of the major networks, and a couple of emailers here want to know if you are doing your show about the RNC, reporting on the RNC there, or is it going to be a mixture this week?
We're still broadcasting the show. So today we broadcast the show from right outside that inner ring, right around the convention center itself. We're going to be broadcasting all week this week, all week next week, and we kind of mix it up. We bring some of the events at the RNC into the show, and then, of course, cover world events, too. And, you know, interestingly enough, I think the world events kind of help Trump at this point as well. You know, when we watch things like what Erdogan is doing in Turkey, I think that definitely helps Trump. And I think that the campaigns realize that.
What's your thought on that? That's all over the map. I mean, was it a staged coup, do you think? Because we signed off on Friday talking about that. Staged coup, intentional to shore up the Erdogan's militaristic power, reign of tyranny, or something different?
No. I think you're on the right track. I actually posted a YouTube video that I made really fast on my phone on the spot because I wanted to get my prediction up and online. And my prediction was that the coup was not going to be successful, and at the end of the day, he was going to use this to expand his powers. And within 24 hours, the coup was not successful, and he was using it to expand his powers. It's not hard to read this guy's ambitions. Now, did he stage it himself? I would hope not. I mean, over 200 people died in this. But we do know that absolute power corrupts absolutely, so these tyrannical people are not afraid or humble enough to not kill their own people. So I hope he didn't stage it himself. If he didn't stage it himself, I would bet you dollars to donuts, even though it hasn't hit the news, that if they dig deeper behind these 6,000 people that they arrested, that there is some Russian influence. Because if you remember, Russia had their fighter jet shot down by Erdogan. Erdogan reminded Russia that, you know, they're not going to bow down to Russian whim. And no general in his right mind would try to stage a coup if he didn't have a larger ally if that coup were to work. If the coup was not to work, then the ally can always wash their hands in deniability and say, oh no, we had nothing to do with it. See, you can't tell, you can't tell. I'm just telling you, by now interviewing and talking to many generals in my life, no general's going to do that without some sort of support. So he either did it himself or there were hints of somebody else helping him. The idea that maybe America helped, I don't think so. Obama and Erdogan are kind of on the same page. Most people don't know this, but about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months now, Erdogan was actually in the U.S., and it got very little media coverage, no fanfare at all, and he was actually in Pennsylvania meeting with the guy he is now blaming for inciting that coup. So, bump, 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 that mystery gets deeper. But overall, I think exactly like you said, Doug, I think that he's going to use this to continue to expand his power. He already has. 4 or 5 weeks ago, he was trying to change the Constitution to give himself more power. That wasn't really working. You know, he was getting a little pushback, and as we all know, nothing brings a population together like a war. Look at George Bush's approval levels after 9/11. It was up to 90%. So these dictators and rulers know that. They know, hey, we have to do something to get everybody behind us. And I can tell you, just off of the response that I've been getting from Turkey based on my video, the Turkish people are blind to what just happened. So many of them are saying, oh no, Erdogan is wonderful, and so what if he needs more power? That's exactly what we need right now. We need somebody who's strong and bold. And I'm sitting here thinking, no, stop. That's what we did. That's what we did with the Patriot Act. That's why nobody under 16 years old is ever going to live in an America that's free. But it's hard. It's hard to tell people who go through a tragedy what you see from that 30,000-foot perspective. They're only seeing it from their perspective, and from their perspective, Erdogan just saved them from a takeover, not realizing that he's using it to really slit their throats.
To me, looking at our political landscape today, even after 2001, I think we're ripe for that same thing today, and especially with the calls for law and order, make America safer. That's not to say, and this is not an indictment against Donald Trump. It's just the mentality of people today. Very similar to the shell shock or the PTSD after 9/11.
Yeah.
That's just my observation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Josh.
Amen.
Taking time out of your day and at the RNC to give us some live updates. And you stay safe out there, and we'll talk with you more throughout this week.
Yes.
Sounds good. Sounds good, guys. Right. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your show.
Yeah, thank you, Josh.
Have a good night.
God bless.
Folks, that was Josh Tolley from joshtolley.com, T-O-L-L-E-Y, joshtolley.com.
You can hear him live each and every weekday, 10 to noon Eastern time on Genesis Communication Network.
Yeah.
And go to joshtolleyshow.com.
I'm going to tell you, he's got a really great radio program. Also, his book, Evangelpreneur. Evangelpreneur. Yeah. Seriously, it's a great book. Even though I can't pronounce it, or I've got a hard time pronouncing it. It's a fantastic book. And especially if you're a Christian business person, it's a fantastic read. And in fact, it's a fantastic read just for life success as well. And Josh is a life coach and, great dynamic speaker. If you've ever heard him speak, it's just fantastic. Joe, go ahead. You were going to say something there, I think.
Yeah, no, Evangelpreneur is a fantastic book, and it lays out biblical principles of money management and business practices. And it is not a book on how to get rich quick. It's a book on how to make money right and make money work for you through a Christian perspective while helping others. We'll be right back after these brief messages. You're listening to this Monday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stay with us.
is the Global Star Radio Network.